This is Brock and Salk.
QBs must be punished.
I worked myself into a lather disagreeing with myself.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Oh, no, you is the worst.
And the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Me and my beard, we'll pump up the crowd.
Yeah! Yeah!
Well, good morning, Seattle. Beautiful morning. I think some of the haze and some of the smoke with the onshore flow should blow out just a little bit today. It's warming up. The Seahawks are going to take part in practice here. I think by my count, I have only about five or six more real work days before they start their preparation for the Denver Broncos in regular season game number one. But they'll get going here. Tom Wassel is in for Salk, the professor. I'm sorry for those of you that count on him every day at 7:15. We had to bump him an hour. He will join us at 8:15 because of Russell Wilson. And Tom,
yeah,
can you just make sure by the end of the show I tell this Russell Wilson story?
Are you allowed to tell that story?
I think so. Yeah, I think I'm confident enough. And if I'm not, then I'll apologize.
Because you're tall, you can get away with it. Nobody's going to hassle you about
exactly
it.
Absolutely right.
I'm telling you, we could do a half hour on this height thing. The stories that you and Lydia and boy Howdy are sharing about one's height.
All the short guys who are in our audience know exactly what I'm talking about.
We
don't even really have to discuss it. They know exactly what I'm saying.
Yes.
So, all those guys who have been looked over and passed over their whole life.
Right. Russell looked you in the eye and said, "What though, Tom? Don't let the haters hold you back."
Now, he said why? He said, what did he say exactly? He said, why? Is somebody giving you trouble about your height? It's not that somebody gets up in your face about it necessarily.
Are you ready to give some trouble here? Are you going to get in trouble over the next 12 minutes?
I hope not.
Did that Mariner game trouble you last night? This line between being hurt and injured. James Paxton is super frustrating. I totally get it. And I'll be the first to tell you, I was exchanging texts last night with Salk and just airing some of my frustrations.
Must have been getting it on all sides, because I was too.
You were too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was really bummed. Give me cut number one here, C-Raj. I don't think any of you, if you're listening this morning, you know what happened last night. A comebacker hit Paxton at just the wrong spot.
Way to Lowry, swung on line drive right back at Paxton off his side. The ball rolls to the first baseline, picked up by Mike Zunino, and Paxton is hurt. A base hit by Lowry, a line drive right off of James. Not exactly sure where it got him. But once he tried to get to the ball, he couldn't reach down to get it. And Paxton taking a long walk out towards second base, now bending at the waist. It got him on his left arm. And Paxton, I believe, is going to have to come out of this ball game.
And Paxton said after the game, cut number two here, that ball, that laser, that 95-mile-an-hour exit velo off of Lowry's bat that got him right on his left forearm. Yeah, the situation could have been a little different, said James. Cut two.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a lot worse. You know, I'm glad that there's no broken bones. It's just got all muscle, and it's just swollen right now. So, you know, doctors said I should be good to go as soon as we can get the swelling out of there.
Yep, and lastly here in cut number four, I mean, I guess this is the positive with James. He has been down this road before.
You know, I had the same kind of thing happen, I think, in 2016. I got hit by a pitch, came back, hit me in a very similar spot. I forget how long that took. You know, hopefully it's not long. We're going to do everything we can to get the swelling out of there as soon as possible.
Hurt or injured? And obviously, last night he was injured. Obviously, and the baseball people will tell you that the thing swelled up, that the laces were on the forearm, that he could not go. In fact, he went up to the ground ball and didn't even attempt to pick it up and throw it to first base. That he was injured, and for the Mariners, he will go on the 10-day DL. He's going to miss at least one turn here. And is this just unfortunate, dumb luck yet again for Mr. Paxton?
Well, he's either the most unlucky pitcher I've ever seen, or he's just constituted in a certain way where if he makes the wrong motion or something hits him, he just breaks.
Yeah.
And he needs a little time to be fixed.
Y-Man yesterday, Danny David Moore, was talking about this. And I think it was actually with Tui, who tore his Achilles in a little rundown the other day.
Yeah.
And so many times that we see these pitchers. Is this what pitchers have become as far as bubble wrap goes? That, man, it is just, you know, something goes wrong. The back is a little bit tight. I'm not even going to risk it, you know, with James a couple weeks ago or a month ago or whatever that was that missed a start or two. Or, you know, the ball comes off and my whole forearm swells up and I throw 97, man. I'm a Ferrari that just revs and I can't do it and I'm going to be out of that game. Is this just now the nature, unfortunately, A, of elite pitchers you're going to be so doggone careful with, and then B, with Paxton in particular, that he just, unfortunately, is snake bit when it comes to injuries?
Do pitchers ever pitch at a level where they're not at their optimum health? I
think that's a fair question.
That's my question. And again, in the moment, right after you get hurt, when the ball smacks you like that, it's going to hurt a little bit. It smarts, as they say, Brock. And I'm not faulting him for coming out of the game. He knows his body. But you're not going to be at optimum health every single time out. It's like, oh, well, you know, if I'm not 100%, I can't throw my slider the way I want to. Well, yep. You're still a pitcher.
Yep.
You're still a professional baseball pitcher whose job it is to go out there and pitch.
And I know you're frustrated, man. I know a lot of this is not even reasonable. I think you would even say that, Tom. It's just not reasonable, right? You just know what's at stake here for this team.
I don't like the fact...
This is a series that you just really want to win, man. These are 10 playoff games against the best team going now in baseball in Oakland, and you're right there. I mean, you're playing right with them. You know, you lose 7-6, you get after that vaunted bullpen the other night, but again, their streak continues. This Oakland team, when they've had a lead after 7, they're 55-0. They've not lost at all this year. And then last night, you're right there, man. It's pitch for pitch. It's play for play. Felix comes in. He's phenomenal for Felix. It's the best he's been in too much. So I think there's a level, and I fight the same thing. I wasn't reasonable last night because I was barking at the TV, like, find a way to stay in that game.
But when people ask you, when the team is struggling like they have for the past month, when you run into people on the street or on Twitter or whatever, and they say, hey, do you think the Mariners are going to be able to make the playoffs? It's this type of issue that makes me skeptical about that. It's not that I don't think that they have the talent or the chemistry or the leadership. I think they have all that stuff. They do. But when you're worrying about your ace start to start, if he gets nicked or dinged or whatever, yeah, or he strains his lat fielding a ball,
yeah,
whatever it is, it's that type of stuff that makes me really unsure, that makes me what you would call a doubter.
I would say this, to answer your question earlier, I've had that conversation with Mel Stoudemire, both on and off the record down at spring training. I've talked to him a lot about pitchers. They're fascinating to me. You know, I should have been a pitcher, man. I really should have been. 6'5", lefty. My arm never tired. I loved throwing. I loved pitching until I got burnt out at 13 and played way too many games when I hadn't gone through puberty and everybody else had. And I was like the late bloomer that had no strength, and I hated it.
Did you get bullied for that?
No, I didn't get bullied, but I just wasn't any good. I went from being like, you know, the best kid, the young Sandy Koufax, to like, I hate this, and I want the season to end. Unfortunately, never picked up a baseball again, so I love it. And I would, to answer your question about do you have to be right, those guys have taught me that yes.
You do, 100% the time.
The amount of force, right? When you throw downhill, it is like 7 times the force of throwing flat. I threw a football on flat ground. Like, why did my arm never tire? Why was I not in bubble wrap like these guys are? Well, the amount of force that these guys create when they throw 96 miles an hour going downhill is a very different animal than throwing a football and doing that deal.
Well, I'm too short to really know either way.
Yes,
but I have a feeling like for the first 130 years of baseball, that may not have been true. And only recently, because we think we know so much better now, do we hold that as a truth.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think a Nolan Ryan or those guys would say, rub some dirt on it and go play. You know, I think they would.
I don't think that he would.
There's 255 pitches in a game.
He might say that, and that may not be right either. Okay, but the truth may be in between.
Somewhere in between.
And everybody's body is different.
It is. So can I tell one quick little story here? Because there's, unfortunately, like between Felix, no, it's not. It's the Brock and Salk show.
Uh-huh.
But I separated my shoulder. Have you ever separated the shoulder? You ever do that?
Yeah, a couple times.
A couple times you did that? I separated my left throwing shoulder. We were playing the University of Arizona night game. It was a game that Ortiz Jenkins backflipped into the end zone.
The leap by the lake, it's known.
By the lake, see, Rod, you were watching it. Yes.
Fresh
I was 6 years old then.
And you know what? See, Rod, that lake is fresh water. Okay, that's why there was a confusion between Elliott Bay for you and Lake Washington.
Yeah, that's the only body of water I recognize.
That's exactly right.
Ortiz Jenkins backflipping into the end zone.
That's exactly right.
It's fresh water.
It was fresh water. Well, earlier in that game, before the backflip, this D tackle for theirs swam our right guard, hit me. It drove me into the ground, and I heard this crack. Like, oh. It's the first time I'd hurt my ankle the year before that, but that was the first time I'd ever hurt shoulder, collarbone, it just cracked. I was like, uh-oh, that's not good. Right? And I get up, and I'm like kind of, that doesn't feel good. Next play is a handoff, and I handed the ball off, and it like cracked again. Oh, man. And then it felt like a knife was just stabbed right into my collarbone or my shoulder. Like I couldn't lift my arm up. I'm like, this is not good.
You're talking about a separated shoulder.
This is not good. So I go off to the side, and I can't play the rest of the game. I can't lift my arm. It's one of the most painful injuries I had. It was more painful than bruising my kidney and pissing blood. It was more painful than a dislocated ankle. It was more painful than rib cartilage. It was more painful than nearly breaking my neck. It hurt so bad. So I get off, and I get x-rays. I have like a grade 2, right? So grade 1's mild, grade 2, grade 3's the worst. Well, years later, Cody Pickett, the rodeo man, he's playing for the Huskies. He separates his shoulder. He has a grade 3 separation. And I'm like, well, he's just done. Oh, no, he's not. He played. I'm like, huh? No. That's not a grade 3. Like, I know I had a grade 2. There is no possible way. I couldn't lift my arm.
And how did you feel?
I felt diminished. I felt like a wuss. I looked at how is it possible that he is playing with a grade, and it was a legit. He had a legit grade 3 AC joint separation. I had a grade 2. I at least said shoot the thing up. And Scott Linehan, still coaching in the NFL, said, we are not shooting it up. You're going to damage your rotator, your labrum, and everything else if we shoot it up. I, over my dead body, is it going to be on my watch that we shoot you up and you try to play through this? That's not happening because you're going to damage everything else. He didn't shoot it up. He played through a grade 3 separation. I don't know how he possibly did that. So to go all the way back, that's a 3-minute, very long-winded story. To go back to something you just said there, everybody is a little bit different. And could Madison and Bumgarner have pitched through that last night? I don't know. Probably not.
I'm not sure which pitchers could and which couldn't. And again, I'm not saying dumb, it doesn't
is this,
hurt.
Is this just dumb luck last night with James Paxton yet again? This guy is the most unlucky Michael Saunders, you know, Canadian Mariner that we have had, that he just is so unlucky and can't
stay healthy. Which one of them stepped on the sprinkler head? Was that Saunders?
That was Saunders.
That was Saunders? Because an inch to the right, and this might be, and he just gets nicked.
Yep.
So the luck aspect of it is that it hit him flush. And where it hit him on the arm rather than right on the meat, right? But
out of adversity, be it height, be it a separated shoulder, out of adversity sometimes is born some great stuff. And Felix last night cut 6. This is Scott Servais, who has been hard on Felix the last month. He's not giving him a chance to win. Skipper last night knows the job the King did.
Yeah, well, that's the spot. He did a great job. Awesome. He went out there, you know, he just got out into the dugout, gets the ball off Pax, as he knew right away it's his ball, and he had to take it, and thought he really competed well. The key to this ball club, you got to throw strikes. You got to throw strikes against the A's. He did that. Thought his fastball had pretty good life at the bottom of the zone. I think he had 7 or 8 ground ball outs tonight. Curveball was effective. He really competed well.
You know, Felix said the other day, I'm a starter.
Yes.
And nobody's doubting that. Nobody's going to remember, no matter what happens with him coming out of the bullpen, nobody's going to remember him as a reliever, okay? But at the same time, Felix's 2018 season needed something to jumpstart it. He's had a handful of good outings, just a handful. But what he did last night in an unexpected situation, right? We thought he was going to come out of the bullpen, go an inning, 2 innings, whatever it is, maybe in mop-up duty. You don't know.
As maddening and frustrating as Paxton was, that injury, it was maddening and it was frustrating. Wasn't Felix's performance on the other side as awesome? It was for me, because I've been hard on Felix. Everybody's been hard on Felix for the last 2.5 years. He's not lived up to it, unfortunately. You know, this is your opening day starter this year, and this is a guy with a nearly 6 ERA that from starting pitching situation, Tom, statistically, it's one of the worst in all of baseball this season. And here he goes, been demoted. They wouldn't even put him in the game the other day. They warmed him up a couple times, and here he goes, and it was a have to. You have to go in that game. You have to deliver. And 5 2/3 innings, 2 runs, really 1 bad pitch that one of the hot guys in all of baseball, Jed Lowry, takes over the yard on the first pitch curveball. And outside of that, he gave you every opportunity to win that game last night. I don't know. It was awesome. It was certainly redeeming, and it was great to see. There's simply no question about that.
Yeah, last night was definitely the type of game that for the fans, and I felt this on Twitter. This is one of the great aspects of Twitter. I felt like every pitch, every inning, Mariner fans were all dialed in together as to what was going on. It wasn't a game where you could skip out the door for a couple of innings and come back. No. If you started at the beginning of the game and you knew what was going on, you had, even though it was a loss, you had to hang with them every single pitch of that one just to watch Felix. And I think we in a way, we owed that to him.
The professor here moments away, but it felt like baseball, playoff baseball,
yeah,
in the sense where every pitch mattered, every inning mattered. And just like baseball, playoff baseball writes some pretty incredible scripts between Cano, Felix, and Paxton. We sure had a bunch of them last night. I promised you the professor. He was kind enough. He couldn't join us at 7:15. He pushed him back an hour because of Russell. But we talked to him every day. Here's John Clayton.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
If you want to take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, JC.
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Yeah, we're doing great. Did you get a chance to catch any of Russell?
I did not. It sounded like he was pretty good.
Yeah, he was he's just down to earth, man. It's just normal. It's just great in this setting at times that, and it's fun to have Tommy and Tom's in for Salk today to, just have him. He's just wired differently, John. And do you think there's times we take him for granted in this market?
No question. I mean, I think when you go back and listen in December, some of the criticism that was there, I mean, everything until December was one where everybody was talking him up, rightfully so, for MVP. And he did just about everything. Now, again, I think what ends up happening, and as a quarterback, is that, you're asked to do too much because things aren't going well around you. You're not getting the blocking. You're not getting the running. And so here he is. He's not getting the first down drives early. He's not getting the scores in the first quarter. But so much of it was not him. And so he goes into the position in the fourth quarter where he outscores everybody by 78 points. That's more than anybody else in the league, just to try to get victories or get games close. So, no, I think that he probably sometimes isn't appreciated as much as he should be.
How serious is this broken finger for Rashad Penny?
It's just basically ending his preseason. It's not going to probably cost him a chance to miss the opener, but again, it sets him back a little bit because he loses that valuable time to go out there and just, get in the groove and get set in this offense. And so surgery, I guess, in Philadelphia today, 3 to 4 weeks, so expect him for the opener, but now his preseason's over, and now things fall. Can C.J. Procise go out there and, be healthy enough to be on the field? That's still a big if.
I guess who does this open the door for more? We know Chris Carson. I think he was going to start anyway. You've been adamant about that, and I've ridden right on your coattails with that. But who does this provide more opportunity for, Mike Davis or C.J. Procise?
Well, it gives them a great opportunity for Mike Davis, who I think should make the team because he's just such a good, solid runner. I think what it does, it keeps everything viable for C.J. Procise, who, at least before this injury, the hip injury, I think he was sitting in the number 3 hole. Now I think he could drop all the way to number 5, but it still, gives him the possibility. Or really what it does, it raises the possibility that this team probably needs to keep 5 running backs because, just depending how it's going to be for Penny, they got to just make sure that, everything, if he can be there for the opener.
Is Dez Bryant going to get a job with the Browns?
You would hope not.
I would hope not.
If you're Dez Bryant, is that really where you want to be? Because things are so bad back there that they have beer dispensers that can't open until they win a football game, and you get free beer if they win, and you don't know when they're going to win, and they open up against the Steelers. So I just don't know if this is going to be the great fit, because can you imagine the first time that Dez Bryant blows up and it's on Hard Knocks? Because you would figure that would happen, but he's got nothing else. I don't know what they would offer. They need a receiver. Dez would be a decent fit. But a lot of people think that, with his lack of speed right now, maybe they'd be wise to go a different direction.
I think many of us were excited about Hard Knocks. Here's Baker Mayfield and Tyrod Taylor. Here's the woebegone Browns that have won one game in 2 years. Here's Hugh Jackson, who's a pretty live wire. And then let's throw in Todd Haley.
Greg Williams.
Let's throw in psycho Greg Williams. Ken Dorsey with
John Dorsey.
John Dorsey with a dip as big as Lake Erie. I think a lot of us were excited, but I don't know, John, if this is great for the NFL. Their culture, their negativity, their demeaning, their swearing, their just whole way they go about football is I think a lot of, frankly, what's turned some people away from the game.
Yeah, I think a lot of validity to what you say because, it comes off so negative. And probably we overreact to this, but, boy, when you see, Haley get into it with Greg Williams, you see Haley disagreing with the coach, there seems to be a kind of a bad sentiment about it, but you're right. They're letting the swearing go, and it's cable, so I guess you can get away with it, but it doesn't really put everybody in a good light.
Man, what I wouldn't give to see a Pier 6 brawl between Dez Bryant, Jarvis Landry, Greg Williams, and Todd Haley.
That would be awesome.
Great television right
no
there.
No question.
With Hugh Jackson in the middle just going, oh, it's okay, guys. Be nice. Everything's okay.
What, and Carl Nassib can come in and start talking about the
financial advice.
All the different money things that you can get from it.
Hey, do you think Tom asked me in Blue 42, do you think Schneider and crew upstairs are going to be busy with the trading situation and moving via trade with some of the different positions, both of strength on this roster and still areas of need over the next couple weeks?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Because I think you can see it now. They've kind of gone back, not as dramatic as they did back in 2010, of just circling a lot of players through the roster just so they can kind of get a different look at different guys. I mean, what is it, like sometimes 2 and 3 moves a day? And so with that in mind, I'm sure they're going to be looking for trade things and all that. We're up to 70 trades right now, and last year there was 93. I would imagine that with Seattle getting involved in a couple of them, that this is going to take over 100 trades this year.
I'm going to give you a minute here, and Howdy, to get ready for the real wild card, but I'm gonna give you a pseudo wild card.
Oh.
How tall are you, John? Like, if you were at the combine, toes out, heels together, how tall are you?
Well, I used to, when last time I was measured, I was 5'10 and a half.
You were 5'10 and a half.
Yeah, so probably, I mean, what is it when you get to a certain age?
Yeah, you're probably 5'10". Yeah, you're probably a legit 5'10". Have you ever felt like your height has gotten in the way? If you were 6'3", do you think your job would be easier, better? Do you think you could have owned it even more?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, 5'10", 160 pounds is pretty well.
Yeah.
He's right in the middle. He doesn't have to worry that much. If you're below 5'9", you're in some trouble.
Like you and Howdy.
Yeah, that's right.
You've had to overcome a lot.
Yeah, 5'10", you're fine.
Well, he does have to overcome the professor every day, this wild card question.
Time now for the wild card. What
wild card? Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
If I were to write a biography of you, who would you like to write the foreword, and what do you think the subtitle should be? Like John Clayton, wow. Story of...
Wow, that's a great question.
Oh, man, that's a good one. I probably would like to have, let's see, it would more than likely have to be somebody from the Steelers, and so I don't know if it'd be Joe Green writing the foreword, or maybe having Terry Bradshaw write the foreword, because then, of course, if Terry does it, you'd have no idea. You probably wouldn't understand any of it, so that would be good. But I would have to think, somebody from where I started, started back in Pittsburgh when I was in high school and that. Those guys took me under their wings and were so good to me. Maybe an LC Greenwood when he was around. So one of the Steelers, I think. But I'd lean toward either Terry Bradshaw or Joe Green.
And then what would be the subtitle? Is that what it is, subtitle, Howdy?
Right, like the title would be John Clayton. What would be the subtitle?
Get out the database. Get out the numbers. It's like a early start. That would be maybe one of the titles it could go. But, just the love of football.
The love of football.
The love of football.
From the database to the Hall of Fame. JC, appreciate it, man. Thank you, John, for moving back an hour. We'll see you here. Oh, no, are you coming out here to training camp?
I'll be there after the show practice is pretty much starting right when the show is ending.
That's
so
exactly right.
I'll come over right after
the
show.
Hey, John, I have a quick question for you. Do you miss – we were talking about where the Oakland A's play at that awful Coliseum, and people don't want to go there at all because it's dumpy and whatever. Do you ever miss – buildings like Three Rivers Stadiums, those all-purpose sort of cookie-cutter, nothing big hunks of concrete?
No, not really.
You don't miss that at all?
No. They were just it was just too benign. I mean, it was like, there was no – it seemed like there was no imagination with them. And, of course, I mean, back then, everybody wanted to house both the football team and the baseball team in there. And you go down, and sometimes, I mean, particularly when you go down to Cincinnati, it just seemed like, what am I? Am I in Pittsburgh or am I in St. Louis? Where am I?
It just seemed like with all the great memories that the Steelers had in that building that would make people want to go, but I guess not.
No.
Cookie cutter.
No. All right.
Appreciate it, John. Thank you, my man. You can hear John Clayton. The Mariners, as he referenced there, have an early game, 12:30, I believe, first pitch with the Oakland A's. Try to salvage one game in that series and not get swept away from an Oakland team that's just phenomenal. We'll get back to a little bit of baseball, a bunch of those topics at 9 o'clock. I do want to hit on this. You asked last night and emailed me a question, Tom, about one coach in particular who's right in the spotlight of Hard Knocks. And does that really encapsulate where the game is today? A good discussion about the game and the culture of football coming your way. Wassel in for Salk. It's Brock and Salk. What's up, Tom? Brock and Salk here. Wassel in for Salky. What you barking at?
Nothing. It's fine.
Why you got to bark?
Nothing. We'll get back to it later.
Why you got
to
bark like Greg Williams at the control room? Why you got to be all, you know, authoritarian?
I was doing some research on short versus tall people.
Oh, you were?
We can come back to that later.
Oh, I guess we will. That's going to have to be a potpourri topic at the 9 o'clock hour. Tommy is in for Salk here. I do want to get to this conversation. Go ahead and read the email last night, because you emailed me this topic in relation to Hard Knocks that's going on right now, and the Cleveland Browns, Greg Williams, Todd Haley fighting, Hugh Jackson right in the midst of it.
If you watch Hard Knocks for a half an hour or whatever, you can't help. And if you watched it a couple of years ago with the L.A. Rams, you can't help but notice the defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, and the type of spectacle that he makes out of himself, trying to be the, oh, I'm the man, and I'm this, and I'm that. Do you guys have that bite there where he talks
number
about?
Number 19.
Yeah,
there.
Play that.
There are people in this room that have won Super Bowls. There are people in this room that chose to be here, that wanted to be here. I turned down 7 other jobs to come here. I want to be here.
Believe it or not, I actually believe that some people might have chosen to go to the Browns. I don't believe he turned down 7 other jobs to be there. Anyway, the question I had for you was, are the players in that meeting who are listening to him, do they look at him like he has credibility, or is he just an absolute joke to them?
Yeah, that's a fair question. Impossible for me to answer with all the defensive-minded guys in there as well, Tom. I think by and large, this is just what the culture of the NFL has been. And you feel it. You feel it. You felt it with Rex Ryan on Hard Knocks years ago. Right, where he's just dropping F-bomb after F-bomb and just demeaning and belittling some of the Rams, you know, some of their culture and Jeff Fisher's kind of way of doing it. You're certainly getting that sense in this Hard Knocks as much as ever. I mean, Todd Haley has been a grinder and a lifer in the NFL, and he is just salty.
And he's someone who has been known to get into it with his own players
on
the sidelines, too.
Oh, yeah. He and Big Ben did not have a great relationship in Pittsburgh, and Greg Williams has bounced around everywhere in this league, and Hugh Jackson's been a bunch of different spots. And
both of them have had success. Like, I don't want to have this conversation and make it sound like they're just two bums. Greg Williams was the defensive coordinator for the Saints. He had to go through Bounty Gate. He engineered that whole thing, but they had a very good defense. Todd Haley took an Arizona Cardinals offense, a great one, to the Super Bowl there. So
Greg Williams was great in Tennessee with Jeff Fisher.
Right.
Took him a D coordinator, I believe, when they made it all the way to the Super Bowl.
They're far more accomplished than a guy like Rob Ryan, for example.
Yeah.
But we talk about this cultural change, the shift in the NFL, and I wonder if guys like that are just a thing of the past.
Well, you're just feeling some of this, and I think it also comes to light with what's going on at the University of Maryland right now. In the headlines coming out of their college football program, where their head coach, DJ Durkin, is put on administrative leave. Has been asked to not run that program anymore. As you hear from players inside of it, players that have played for him in the past, he is demeaning, he's belittling, he is bullying. It is just a nasty, toxic culture. Sadly, they had a player in a tragic situation pass away in June in a conditioning drill. Strength coach has now been fired. He's not on administrative leave, or he has stepped down and he's left the program. The president of the University of Maryland went outside the norm and actually said, yeah, man, this is a mess, and we are going to own it. He is going to own the responsibility of cleaning it up.
Okay, now, before we overcorrect, because the Dave Wyman in me is wanting to ask a question here.
Okay,
now this kid died. That's a serious issue. That shouldn't have happened. They should have done everything they could to prevent that. But football is still football.
Yes.
And it demands some level of toughness from you as a player and as a coach.
Yes.
Where is that middle ground where we can still have a coach yell at a player if he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing? I think a little intimidation is not a bad thing all the time if it motivates the right player.
Your pop's got rug burns. Why? Because of Bill Parcells, man.
Right.
Winning Super Bowls in New York, the ultimate fear-driven, intimidating, dog-cussing, belittling of players, but players from 20 to 30 years ago
that they respect.
What they knew.
Yeah.
Those players of that generation knew that. The players of today doesn't go that way.
None of them?
Oh, I'm sure there are some, but the players of today don't just say, yes, sir, and jump through the hoop. The players of today say, why? Why am I going to do that? Why do you want me to do that? And why are you talking to me that way? And Scott Frost, I love Scott Frost. I've said before, he's now at Nebraska. This is the one program that I would buy stock in. This was his introductory press conference in the spring, introduced at Nebraska. And, Tom, I think he walks that line. He coaches these guys hard. Their program, and he played for Bill Parcells. Okay, he played for these guys. He has his resume of who he played under the NFL, unbelievable. But here's Scott Frost's perspective on it.
One of our sayings is have a desire to excel and no fear of failure. And part of that is on the coach's responsibility. I mentioned that we're not going to yell and scream at kids. We're not going to cuss at kids. I don't think that's the right thing to do, and I also don't want to make kids afraid to go make a great play. If someone misses a tackle or drops a ball, they don't need to be yelled at. They need to be taught the right way to do it so it doesn't happen again. And once you take away that fear of what might happen if you make a bad play, it really frees you up to go make great plays. So I want our team to always play with the desire to excel and no fear of failure.
But what if that doesn't work? There was a conversation in Hard Knocks the other night where Hugh Jackson and Baker Mayfield, now we're talking about the quarterback, an important player. There's a conversation that those two were having on the middle of the field where Hugh was asking him, that I think it was what time of day he got to the facility and what his morning workout routine was.
Yep.
And whatever Baker told him didn't seem to satisfy him. And instead of yelling at him, Hugh kind of came back with a real passive, oh, well, you got to do that. Like he planted the seed of doubt, and I'm not sure if that's going to work. Because Baker just sort of walked away from him. He didn't really respond.
Baker said to him, I'm not doing what Tyrod, getting up in that RV at 5 a.m.
Right.
Tyrod's got his routine of getting up at 5, like old Russell Wilson does, when the sun comes up and gets in the facility and gets work in and does all that ahead of time. And Baker's like, I'm not that.
But is that what you want to hear from your quarterback on day one of practice?
Right.
Oh, you know, well, here's what I'm not going to do.
Right. Not necessarily.
By the way, what's your read on him? He seems like kind of a punk to me.
Oh, he's got a little edge to him.
He's got an edge, but edge can go either way.
Sure
it can go either way.
Oh, it sure can. He is a fascinating watch for me because he kind of navigates this whole deal, man. He's got a hard edge. He plays recklessly. He plays fearlessly at times. And I think a coach doesn't want to take some of that away. Yet also, he's now with grown men.
See,
and you're not going to get away with some of these things every single week in the NFL. You could for 10 of 12 weeks at Oklahoma. And he played two NFL games at Oklahoma. And then he had 10 other ones where we were so much better talent-wise than the people you played. You've got to do that every single week.
See, he seems like the type of guy that's concerned about what people say about him. And when I looked into Russell's soul before, he is not the type of guy that is worried about that at all. He's worried about what he's doing, and that's it. That's what a quarterback should do. That's what successful quarterbacks do. Baker Mayfield has this, like, this really dark, ugly aura around him that I don't like.
Well, I'll say this. Over the next 10 to 20 years, if the Hard Knocks continue, you're not going to find many more of these cultures. I don't think you will. I think you're going to find – have you ever heard Pete Carroll demean and dog cuss a player out here? Not once in 10 years.
I can't really hear what he's saying.
Not once in 10 years does he demean guys out here. That's just not the way he's going to go about it. And I think you're going to see some of this culture shift, and a lot of it is because of the way I think the players do respond to it and what they bring to the table as well.
At the end of the day, you need to let them know that you're still the coach. You're the one running the show. You can't let Richard Sherman coach the team.
Yep. It's what you just did, that everybody got to hear, yelling at the control room with what you want. Okay, you got some of that in you. That's why we're going to get back to that in 20 minutes. Tom is not done with this height conversation. It will be the first of about four or five in a potpourri of stories right after good news, bad news, no news. Next, Wassel in for Salk, Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
Here's Brock and Wassel. Salk, you'll be back tomorrow, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I'm sure listening right now on his way to the ropes course. Can't wait to dig into all these conversations. There's too many stories, not enough time. But let's do this. Hey, control room, are you there? Can you open up the phone
lines? We're here. Talent, are you there?
Yeah, we are here.
Are you there? Is there any talent out there?
Yes, we're going to do this. The first caller right now at 206-421-3776. I'm going to give two tickets to the August 18th Mariners game. That's this Saturday. The Mariners host the reigning National League champion Dodgers at Safeco Field. You can get tickets online at Mariners.com, but we're going to do it this way. Control room, open up the phone lines. Okay, first caller that can answer this question at 206-421-3776. How tall is John Clayton? John Clayton was on with us a half hour ago and said at the combine he would be one of two heights. I'll give you the two heights that he said he could be. You answer that question, you win two tickets to the Dodgers game coming up this Saturday at Safeco.
Clayton's taller than you'd think he would be if you never met him.
Good news, bad news, no news.
James Paxton was removed after taking a comebacker off his left forearm, and Tuesday's first inning x-rays came back negative.
Bad news. Bad news that for the second time in a really meaningful game, it was down in Anaheim, what, about a month ago, that he couldn't finish the first inning, that his back was locked up, he couldn't throw it, he gave up three runs, and took himself out of that game as he just did not feel right. And this time, a line drive at 95 miles an hour off that little, man, that guy's been a Mariner killer. Off of his left forearm. The good news, it's not broken. The bad news is he's going to be out at least one start and go on the 10-day DL. Bad news.
Yeah, it's bad news. And whenever people approach me and they ask, what do you think the Mariners' chances are? Do you think they can get back in it? Will they make the playoffs? I always want to say yes, because I think that they have the talent to do it. They have the right group of guys. They have the chemistry. They've shown they can win close games. They fight in games. But when I look at the ace of the team and I see that he's unlucky and injury prone, that's the type of thing. And he's going to be missing starts, by the way, in games where they need him in the middle of a playoff race. That's what makes me worried and unsure about this team.
He's not an ace. We've got to get that out of our mind.
Really? That's an interesting conversation. You don't think he's an ace?
You can't be an ace.
Well,
I mean, unfortunately,
but he's there. He's their ace.
No, he's not an ace. When you're unreliable, you cannot be an ace in this game.
Huh.
Next.
Good news, bad news, no news.
That's former ace topic, Felix Hernandez pitched 5.2 innings in his first ever relief appearance.
Well, since he pitched for the Rainiers 14 years ago, let's get that story right there, Howdy.
In the major leagues.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Nearly 400 outings since. Felix was great last night. That's great news. That's the best Felix we have seen. The 5 2/3 was the most innings pitched since June 3rd or 4th. That was vintage. That was the Felix of today. That's who Felix has to be. He was down. He was consistent. He was in the strike zone. He had tremendous depth and movement. His service would tell you that was really good news.
Yeah, good news. He needed something to jumpstart. I won't say his career, but certainly the 2018 version of Felix. It wasn't going to be in the rotation. If they left him in, he was just going to continue to sort of peter along and maybe drag the team down.
Well, it is now.
He needed something to help. He needed a role to help this team. And coming out of the bullpen, I think I said it could be that. I didn't think it would be this soon and in the first inning of a game, but that's the place where he's the most comfortable. So why not? It was terrific.
He was like Giovanni Gallardo. Remember, he was having a rough time, then they moved into the bullpen, then it was awesome.
And he's going to be starting now.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Rookie running back Rashad Penny reportedly has a broken finger and expected to undergo surgery today. Recovery time expected to be 3 to 4 weeks.
It's bad news because he's a rookie, and I think every day of training camp that he misses affects him in some way, but unlike, say, maybe the New York Giants, who drafted a guy second overall and who are depending on him to be there to really be the focal point or one of them of their offense, Penny doesn't need to be that immediately here. Chris Carson's had the great training camp. They look at him as probably the number one guy, even though they're going to use both. So, again, he's a rookie. He needs to be here. But at the same time, I don't think it's killing the team.
And it's not Darius Geis who tears his ACL and is lost for a year plus. It's if you could pick any injury that's not and should not bother you over the course of the season, finger injury, broken finger, get it right, be out the next 3 weeks. He can still condition. He can still run. I am sure next week we will see him out here at Seahawk practice doing his drills before practice, after practice, making sure he keeps himself in shape. But, bad news for him, a bummer for him that he doesn't get the work in with Russell Wilson. He doesn't get the work in the preseason that you would love for him to have so he can really hit the ground running when the regular season begins.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Hey, control room, do we have a winner on the John Clayton height?
We do.
Nice.
A fella named Dakota.
Oh, Dakota.
Dakota, yeah.
Dakota from Paulsbow?
I don't know.
Bremerton?
What do you mean you don't know?
Way to go, Dakota.
Is there anybody in the control room?
Next.
University of Maryland has accepted full responsibility for the death of football player Jordan McNair.
Tragic, tragic news for Mr. McNair and his family. It's awful. It reminds me out here at training camp, a couple decades ago when Corey Stringer lost his life in a heat stroke conditioning element, and the NFL was never the same because of it. And policy was put in place, and I'm going to imagine that policy will be put in place, certainly at that institution, and head coaches and strength coaches all over America are going to evaluate, you know, their process and how they go about working it. It was, and Paul Feinbaum said this the other day, yesterday, and he's right. It's one of the first times I can ever remember a president in this litigious world that we live in say, we own it. This is on us. And he knows what's coming. You know, that a settlement is certainly going to be coming. They're certainly going to own up and going to pay up to it. You don't go about it that way unless you're willing to settle and know your responsibility in it.
It's bad news, obviously, all the way around here, the story is. But when they say they've taken responsibility, I assume what that means is that they're going to take care of this kid's family,
yes,
financially.
Yes.
But I think what will really be interesting is going forward, with these power schools, when they make hires, yep, and they give jobs to guys like Nick Saban or Urban Meyer, will the school be willing to stand up and not let the head coach of a football team run the university, Joe Paterno? Because that's when these problems happen, when you give guys too much power and there's no oversight.
Yeah, that's another good deep discussion, Tom, because this is a little different. This is DJ Durkin, a first-time head coach. I'd be careful lumping him in some ways there with a Saban or a Paterno or an Urban that have decades that run the show, that print the money at those places. This is a guy, first-time head coach after decades in the business, who comes from the Harbaugh and the Muschamp and the Meyer and the old school kind of hard scrabble way. That maybe we can add that to potpourri. We've got about six different stories we're going to have to hit here and just simply not enough time. And, Tom, I promise you a little Russell Wilson story, and you got to get back to me in the control room with what you found when it comes to height. We will do all of that. Wassel in for Salk. Brock and Salk at 710 ESPN Seattle.